This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. 13 states have already passed legislation making it illegal to discriminate or commit hate crimes against transgender people, or those whose gender identity does not match the sex they were born with. In Massachusetts, a gender-based discrimination bill was introduced in 2009. It would make workplace and housing discrimination against transgender people illegal. The bill is currently in the Judiciary Committee, but could face a Beacon Hill vote next month. If passed, the bill would provide some legal protections for transgender adults. But what about gender-confused kids? Representative Barney Frank recently wondered, who would protect them?
Teenage human beings are the cruelest of species.
Frank was recently in Brookline raising funds for Camp Aeronautic, the first summer camp in the nation exclusively for transgendered youth between the ages of 8 and 15. The camp opens its doors in Connecticut for the first time this summer.
So having a place that, where young people can feel protected and reinforced and meet other people like them in a free atmosphere is very, very important.
To find out just how important, Radio Boston's Jennifer Donaldson went out to meet one of the campers, a 15-year-old female-to-male transgender teen named Sam. To protect their identities, Sam and his mom asked that we only identify them by their first names.
A camp like this where you're bunked as you identify, whether it be transmasculine, transfeminine, or genderqueer, whatever it may be, you know, it makes things a lot easier. It takes away so much stress.
Sam will be one of the 30 to 40 kids who will attend the camp for free for 1 week this June. His journey to self-acceptance has been a long one.
You're, 10 years old, and you're thinking to yourself, I kind of want to be a guy. Like, that would make me a lot happier. That's not a normal thought. You know, a normal person wouldn't think that. And so my first assumption was that I was, like, insane.
Things started to make sense for Sam when he happened to see a segment on TV about transgendered youth when he was 11. It took him 2 years of reading and research to be able to tell his mom, Christine.
Let me tell you, when you give birth to a girl and you find out it's a boy and you hear your now son talk about being tormented and you still love them more than anything, as a parent, you're tested on that unconditional love.
Sam's mother, Christine, reached out to the transgender community in the Boston area for support. She worried about how Sam would be treated.
I was afraid of Sam getting beat up, getting teased, being alienated, being discriminated against, and I still worry about all that. We had met some transgendered kids, especially youth, who had been battered. My fears were, they were terrorizing for me.
Sam lives with his mother half of the time and his father, who's divorced from his mother, the other half. His father, a strict Baptist, hasn't fully accepted the fact that Sam identifies as a boy.
When I came out to him, it was kind of one of those things where he was like, well, you know, maybe you're just a lesbian. I'm like, no, that's not it. Sorry. He's been really good and he's been a lot better than I expected. He still doesn't call me by the right pronoun. But he doesn't call me Samantha either.
As summer approaches, this year, Sam has something to look forward to.
For the first time, my kid is excited to go to camp.
I think it'll just be a fun time hanging out with a bunch of trans kids, and trans kids are pretty fun, so.
Our story about transgender teen and camper, Sam, from Radio Boston's Jennifer Donaldson. Well, listeners, join us. Are you the parent of a transgender child? How do you feel about the idea of camp for transgender kids? And what about those new centers for hormonal treatment? We'll talk to the founders of one of those centers today. Do you think changing a transgender child's physiology is the right thing to do? Or not. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a message by Facebook or Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Well, we're joined now by Nick Teich, the founder of Camp Aeronautic. Welcome to Radio Boston, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us in the studio is Dr. Norman Speck. He's an endocrinologist who founded the Gender Management Service 3 years ago at Children's Hospital in Boston. The program is a multidisciplinary clinic that treats the medical and psychosocial issues of children with disorders of sexual differentiation, or what's also known as DSDs. Dr. Speck, thank you for being here with us.
It's good to be here.
Nick, if I can actually just start with you. You are the founder of Camp Aeronautic. What inspired you to open the doors of a brand new camp to transgender teens?
Well, a couple different things, and we're not just for teens. We are for 8 through 15, which is a little bit different from a lot of other services out there. One is that I myself am transgender, and I went to camp as a kid. I went to a girls' camp, and I loved camp, but I think about now, what about kids who knew they were transgender back, you know, who know they're transgender as kids, and I didn't really realize it. And where can they go? They can't go to camp because every camp is split up into boys and girls, and boys here and girls here. And what about them? What choices do they have? And they really don't have a camp that fits them. And the other reason was that I was volunteering for a camp that was an offshoot of the camp I went to as a kid, run by people I was pretty close with. And they let me know after I had transitioned that I was no longer welcome there, and that for the good of the kids, you know, I really wasn't allowed to come back. So the combination of those two things really planted the seed, and I just went for it.
So at Camp Aeronautic this summer, when it gets started, describe what's camp going to be like?
Camp is going to be camp, like it is for any other kid. That's really what we're focusing on, is a place for these kids to just be themselves, to be kids, and to not worry about stuff that they might worry about, to not talk about their gender 24/7. We're not going to be having group therapy sessions. They're going to be playing, swimming, canoeing, singing, campfires, s'mores, whatever. So that's really what it's going to be like. It's just going to be a lot of fun.
And it's going to be a week, 2 weeks?
1 week,
Week, okay. So let me ask you a question, then I'm going to turn actually the same question to Dr. Norman Spack here. It's a week, so as a haven or an escape from the pressures that transgender kids and teens might feel the other 51 weeks of the year. So do you see that as a potential problem, that come that Saturday or Sunday when they have to go back into the world, that they're not going into a world that's changed much?
I think it's going to be tough. It's always tough kind of for that reintegration, but we're going to really help the kids stay in touch with each other. And we're going to focus on that, and we're going to focus on ways that we can do that so that they can empower each other. If a kid has a bad day at school, they can call up their friend from camp, and their friend can say, I know what you're going through. I think that's going to be very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Speck, families and teens and children come to you for some form of medical treatment. We'll get to that in a little bit. But what do you make of the purpose and the goal of a place like Camp Aeronautic?
Well, I think that the best parallel that I can imagine is what I've seen when some of these parents and kids have come together in usually in Philadelphia once a year, or up in Seattle, where they have conferences and group meetings, and see what happens when some of these kids have gotten a chance year after year to spend time with the same kids. You have to remember how relatively rare this is, although we don't have good stats on it. But, you know, the gay is considered to be as frequent as 1 out of 10, but transgenderism is probably somewhere between 1 out of 500 and maybe 1 out of 1,000. So the chance that another a transgendered kid would necessarily have a transgendered person, but one their age, or perhaps their affirmed gender, may be remote if it were not for such activities as these conferences and now this camp. They're going to make friends.
Yeah. So it builds a sense of community and maybe reduces the isolation that a lot of these young people feel. And that isolation is one thing that leads a lot of them to suffer quite a bit. And some of them, if I understand correctly from the work that you do at the gender management services at Children's Hospital, they're suffering so much they actually want some form of medical treatment. So what is it that you do there at Children's Hospital?
Well, First, I should point out that 35% of the kids who have come to us have admitted to having serious thoughts of self-harm, and many have acted on it.
Already. Before coming to you.
Before coming to us. And once they come to us, the incidence of such thoughts goes down almost to zero.
What is it what treatment is it that you're providing
it's
that does
hope.
That?
It's the hope. It's the prospect of hope. That the hope that they would not necessarily have to go through the puberty and develop the body that is inconsistent with their brain.
Basically saying hope that they can become the gender that they they believe themselves to be.
Right.
So how are you providing that hope?
Okay. Well, we consider the what the Dutch have taught us is probably optimal. And that is that, of course, requires our seeing children, young adolescents between the ages of 10 and 14. And that is to decide if they are seriously gender dysphoric, if the beginnings of puberty send them off the deep end, they want to cut off the parts of their body that represent their birth gender, then we put them through the most exhaustive series of tests of gender identity. And for those who qualify, they have supportive parents, they have been in counseling, we get letters from their counselors, then we can put them in a state of pubertal suppression, a treatment that has been used for 30 years for kids who have what we call central precocious puberty, and literally put them in a pubertal limbo until they get to be older.
So basically, just to be clear, you're giving them some form of medication to stop or block it for a
while. Block their puberty. They continue to grow, but they don't pubesce, and they don't develop body parts that they don't want.
But so then what happens when they come off the medication?
If they just, we have yet to have kids change their mind.
Well, but if they can stay on it for life?
No, because you have to develop one way or the other. If you don't have hormones of either testosterone or estrogen, your bones will fall apart. And besides, sooner or later, they want to look like the gender they feel they are. But you have to wait until they're old enough to make that kind of decision. This buys time. If you stop that blockade medication, they will instantly go back into their genetic puberty.
I see. Let's take a quick call here. Paul is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Welcome to Radio Boston, Paul.
Hello.
Hi there. What's your thought today?
Well, I really support the idea of this camp. I think it's excellent. I've been working in camps for over a decade, and they really do change lives. And I think that giving these young transgendered people a place of not just acceptance, but where they can explore all of their interests without worrying about defending their thoughts and their feelings is awesome. And I wonder, I guess my question is I work in camps. Are you requiring transgendered counselors, specialists, facilitators? Is there a large enough population? Because I really do know that the relationships and the bonds that campers make with not just each other but the staff are profound, and I worry that, you know, it's a limited population, and therefore it's limited exposure. And I didn't know. I'd be interested to know more about the camp and its structure and how it's going to run. And I wish it a lot of luck.
Paul, thank you so much for your call. Let's turn that question back to Nick Teich.
Yeah, thanks. What we're doing is we're actually having volunteers as counselors, and I would say about 2/3 of them are transgender or gender nonconforming. And 1/3 is not transgender, but is allied to the transgender community. And we do also have a handful of licensed therapists on staff as well. So absolutely, role models, the counselors as role models is huge, and it's very important. And we want to be able to provide transgender and gender nonconforming role models, but we also want to provide allies who are not trans, so that these kids know that it's not just trans people that are accepting them. There are accepting people who aren't trans. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's very important.
Well, I'd like to briefly bring in another voice to this conversation. He's Brian Kamenker. He's an activist and executive director at Mass Resistance. Brian Kamenker, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So you've been listening into this conversation. What do you make of this sort of overall umbrella question that children as young as 8 can begin to even identify as transgendered?
This is madness. This kind of medical practice, if you can call it that, is extremely fringe. That's why they have to go to a place like Holland to have it accepted. Even, you know, places that have tried it here, such as Johns Hopkins, have decided not to do it because it was so disturbing to them.
The Children's Hospital isn't necessarily a fringe institution.
Which unfortunately hasn't been brought up yet, which mm-hmm. the medical community recognizes is what is happening to these kids. And when you do these things to the kids, pretty much everybody, you know, with a legitimate medical pedigree on this will tell you it makes it worse. They need treatment, not this kind of absolute nonsense. This is something out of the Nazi doctors or something.
So what form of treatment is the alternative in your mind?
Well, I'm not a doctor. You should have one on from you know, they can talk about that, but there are treatments to this, but it doesn't involve mutilating the body or, you know, having people around these crazy people in these camps.
Well, I don't know if anyone necessarily is calling them crazy. That's your word, but
yeah, it is my word.
Yeah, but I guess my final question to you is so that is your fundamental disagreement that children as young as eight just don't know? There's no possible way they can know what gender they are, or is it that you just dispute the existence of transgenderism as a whole?
I guess it would be the latter, and that's how the medical community looks at it too, not just me. That this gender identity disorder is really what they have. The medical community does not recognize what these people are saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Brian Kamenker. He's Executive Director of Mass Resistance. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Kamenker.
You're welcome.
Dr. Speck, let me turn that to you. I mean, Brian Kamenker's saying that the medical community disputes the existence of transgenderism in general.
Well, on the contrary, you know, the Endocrine Society, which is one of the most conservative and largest organization of endocrinologists worldwide with a membership over 20 to 25,000 people, I should point out, as recently as 5 years ago, would not bring this topic to their national meeting, at least in the subject of how to treat and whatever. Well, lo and behold, over the past couple of years and published in 2009, the Endocrine Society just came out with a manual of care for the treatment of transsexual persons, and that includes adolescents, and it recommends the Dutch protocol of suppression. And I want to comment on what he said about mutilation of the body. We don't mutilate anything. People cannot have surgery on their body until they are of majority, okay? So we don't take parts off.
Age 18 then?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Nobody would do any genitoplastic surgery, et cetera, until the person is 18. And by the way, each step along the way from use of pubertal blockade to the later use of cross-sex steroid hormones to ultimately surgery, which can be patient's choice at over 18, at each stage along the way, they are re-evaluated psychologically.
I suppose, though, that even within the transgender community itself, there's a spectrum of opinion that says maybe children shouldn't be asked or given the option of taking any form of medication until they're older and that other social supports may be more effective. But let me turn the last question back to you, Nick Teich. So we're talking about your camp. We're talking about these new treatments that are available for young people who are transgendered. Do you feel, though, however, that at the end of the day, does this mean that society is turning a corner here in Massachusetts for the transgender community, or is it just sort of a small step along the way?
Well, I really have a lot of high regard for Dr. Speck and the work he does. I do think that it's moving in the right direction, but there's still a long way to go. So we hope it just keeps moving in the right direction.
Well, that's Nick Teich. He's founder of Camp Aeronautic. It's the first transgendered children's camp in the nation. It opens its doors in Connecticut this summer. Nick Teich, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
We were also joined by Dr. Norman Speck. He's co-founder of the Gender Management Service, an interdisciplinary clinic for transgenderism at Children's Hospital. Dr. Speck, thank you so much.
Good to be here.
There's much more after the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.